Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Almost one in 10 Americans is out of work. What are they to do to find another job? Why is it that many of them cannot muster the courage to tell anybody other than immediate family members that they have lost jobs? What process do you need to go through to find yourself another work and to feel good about yourself emotionally? We have two guests with us. There's an interesting article in the Washington Post on, I can't remember if it's the 11th or the 12th, because my notes say August 112, which isn't right. At any rate, long about that time. And it highlighted appearances and worries that a number of people who are in the growing ranks of the unemployed or underemployed, suffering in silence and keeping details of job losses and financial pressure secret from all but close family and friends. It highlighted the story of one of our guests this hour, Clinton Cole, and the story went like this. For weeks after his layoff, he would rise at the usual time, shower, shave, put his suit on, head out the door to a job that no longer existed, and stayed away until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, whiling away the hours at the library or on a park bench in a wireless internet hotspot. He lost his job as business development manager with General Dynamics Information Technology and was just too ashamed to tell anybody what had happened. He'll be joining us at the top of the show to talk about his story. And Dr. Robert Leahy is with us as well, has written extensively about how you can handle a job loss in as much as possible a matter-of-fact way, and how you go about getting unemployment benefits and how you move on to finding something else, maybe a whole new direction for your life. Director of the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy, author of the Job Loss Recovery Guide, The Worry Cure, and Anxiety Free. So we welcome both gentlemen to our show. And we do have the article posted in the program notes on our website. Thank you, Rob, which will have the right date. Clint Cole, thank you so much for being with us. Hello, Clint.
Well, you're most welcome.
And also joining us, Dr. Robert Leahy. Dr. Leahy, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Nice to talk.
Yeah, great to have you here. I hope we can help a lot of people this hour. Clint, let's start with you. Tell me about how you learned about your job loss and why you held it so close to the chest for a while.
Well, I learned about my job loss, I would say, in late December of last year, and it was quite a surprise because, I mean, in October I'd been given a raise based on merit.
And then, oh, my.
Yeah, and then in November, moved from a windowless office to a two-window office, and in December, I had received a performance evaluation that said that I had fully met the requirements of the job. But despite that, I was given a notice that my job would be ending in a couple of months. And General Dynamics Information Technology did approve me to transfer to another part of General Dynamics Advanced Information Systems, listing me as available staff due to contract loss or business downturn. And I did interview for that position and did well in the interview, but the sister company of GDAIS decided to hire somebody else off the street who had more customer knowledge with that particular federal government agency. And so at that point, then in February, I was not retained by General Dynamics.
Mm-hmm. And you really did get dressed every day, and I'm not going to say getting dressed and get suited up and leaving the house, but not telling anybody really what had happened, so people didn't know how you were suffering.
Well, right. That's true. A good part of that, really, I was headed out to two job fairs and or to the library or on a nice day to, when I finally got to March or whatnot, to work outside at a picnic table. But there was a concern on my part that what people would think. I think there's still a stigma associated with job loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, it undoubtedly occurs throughout the country, but I think in the Washington, D.C. area, the national capital regions, so much is about appearances, who you know, what you do for a living. And people want to know basically how you can help them. And social and business are so intertwined in the national capital area that people that you once thought were friends, they may no longer return your phone calls, or if they can't make money off you anymore. Probably it's a good litmus test as to who your real friends are and who they aren't.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Is this an unusual for people to kind of hold it close to the chest, Dr. Leahy?
Well, actually, you know, Clint deserves a lot of credit for coming out of his shame and telling everybody about it.
Doing a radio show, for heaven's sake,
actually,
right?
I mean, talk about a breakthrough. And
right.
Thank you, Clint, for having the courage to share this experience. I think that Clint's experience is not such an unusual one in regard to shame. About losing a job. The unfortunate thing, and maybe Clint can speak to this in terms of his own personal experience, when you don't tell people about the job loss, you lose the opportunity for the contacts and the support and even the normalization that job loss is just simply part of life for millions and millions and millions of people. I mean, it's very, very hard to find anybody who doesn't have a close family member or friend who hasn't lost their job at some point. So I think the problem with acting on shame in terms of hiding and sort of, you know, making believe that you have a job is that you don't get that opportunity for validation from other people. Yeah, I know what you're going through. I went through it. My brother went through it. My sister went through it, that kind of thing, or even the contacts that might help you, get a job somewhere else or become part of a community. So I think that Clint's experience and kind of the journey that Clint that you're describing is just a wonderful story for people to hear about somebody who had been hiding himself from reality and from other people, concerned about what they might think, and now you're sharing it with the world, and good for you for doing that.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and sometimes if you let it out there, people might be able to help too. If they don't know that you're looking for work, how are they going to know whether or not they can help you, right, Clint?
Well, exactly. You're absolutely right. And that was something that I had been participating in an industry organization called the Telecom Hub of telecommunications executives and managers and so forth. And the that's something that their monthly meetings that the group's leader of this in what's referred to as an in-transition roundtable for folks that are being displaced, that the group's leader, Ardell Fleeson, and the speakers that she would have monthly would tell us that every month, you know, people can't help you. I mean, there was a concern on my part that in sharing that people might distance themselves because they would feel that you required some help that they couldn't offer. But Ardell pointed out that, you know, people can't help you if you deprive them of the opportunity of knowing that you might be able to utilize some assistance on their part.
And right.
So that's really that really got me to thinking that I needed to do that, and I think that's one of the best ways that listeners can help find employment again. And although there's as you mentioned, it was done the unemployment rate rising to 10%. The downside is there is a lot of competition for jobs out there. But I think the good side is that, as Dr. Leahy, as you mentioned, Dr. Leahy, there are plenty of people that have gone through this or are going through it, and I think that reduces the stigma, and so I started talking to people first people in my church at men's dinners and so forth, and then people in the neighborhood or people at the telecom groups. Certainly wasn't going out on the sidewalk and whoever I would run into say, I need a job, nothing like that. But I would start to talk to people, and to my surprise, everybody that I talked to was helpful. They wanted to pass along a suggestion or a name and a number of a person that they knew that was in the information technology field. And I thought to myself, they're trying to be helpful. They've got compassion, and who knows? They may be thinking to themselves, "Gosh, what if it happened to me?"
Right, exactly. And we need to act always that way. It could happen to people. It has. Have you found something else, Clint?
Well, I have found some temporary work. I was doing that this past month. Was temporary consulting work, but the change in the month and the my client announced a major reorg yesterday, and funding was cut. There was some of that was covered in the reading that over the. Over dinner on the Wall Street Journal last night, and change in their defense units and so forth due to the fiscally challenged environment. So at this point, I am back between assignments and seeking work again. So I think this has changed my view in the sense that if you talk to even human resources professionals, they no longer refer to any jobs as permanent jobs. Most they'll say as a job is full-time or part-time. And, my view has changed in the sense that work is good, and obviously it provides income and it helps society. But I think people need to think about work as something that they can do In this economy, there's no guarantee, even with a so-called full-time position. And so I think that's just the new paradigm that we're in our society, in our nation at this point in time.
Would you agree there's a new paradigm, Dr. Leahy?
Well, I think Clint is completely correct. I think the new paradigm has been evolving over the last 50 years. Back in the 1950s, there was a book called Organization Man by, I think, C. Wright Mills, who bemoaned the idea that people would take a job with an organization and stay in it forever. Today, I think people would, kiss the ground to thank God that they could have a job that would be permanent. It's unusual for somebody to have a permanent job. And so I think part of looking at the job market is to think about how flexible you can be and how you're constantly evolving and acquiring new skills. It's sort of like thinking, do I have skills or do I have abilities that the market would demand? It's kind of like thinking that you may have to adjust what you do. You may have to take a step backwards. You may have to be geographically more flexible. You may have to be flexible about the kind of work that you do, as opposed to I take this job and I do this forever. I think Clint is often, also indicating in a way that that there's a lot of potential support out there. And one of the things that Clint, that you might have felt is a sense of shame and or guilt or failure or whatever. Think about, though, how you would feel about a friend or an acquaintance who is going through the same experience. I think sometimes we tend to think that other people are not going to be as kind to us as we might be kind to them. And I think, Clint, you're finding that even strangers have been very supportive and try to be helpful and give you leads of what to do. Is that correct?
Yes, you're right. They absolutely have been.
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that is very important to do is to validate yourself and to say, it really is a hard time to go through this. I mean, the research on unemployment shows that, for example, among the blue collar sample, 48% of the men had major depression as a result of unemployment. That rates of suicide are anywhere between 2 to 8 times higher among people who are unemployed. Rates of myocardial infarction are substantially higher among people who are unemployed. Alcohol abuse, all these other things tend to be aggravated as a result of unemployment. It's a very, very difficult time for people to go through. One thing that I found interesting looking at the research, though, is that that marital dissatisfaction is not directly affected by unemployment. And this is across lots of studies that have been done, that in some marriages, the marital relationship gets better, in some it gets worse. So it's kind of like it's balanced out. Sometimes people find out that, gee, my wife or my husband is really on my side. Thank God I'm with them. You know, in other cases, there's an increase of irritability and conflict and criticism. So having that kind of support can kind of, you know, keep you from descending into the kind of difficulties that many people have.
Yeah. Did things stay okay at home with you, Clint?
I'm sorry, Ms. Dunn, what was your question?
Do you have a family? Was everything okay at home with your children? And
The thing is, it has been a difficult time. My wife has been looking for work for about a year, and so one of the things that I found was helpful. One of the reasons that I did get out of the house, as though I had a job, was in addition to going to the job fairs and interviews and so forth, was to provide space to allow my kids were in school and to allow my wife to conduct her job search at the comfort of our home, and to provide space for her so that we would, minimize the likelihood of cabin fever.
Right.
So I think that and, regular exercise to alleviate the stress of job searches are important ways that listeners can help be productive. And, the way I view it, looking for a job is a full-time job, and that's why I would put on a suit if I had an interview. If I didn't have an interview, I'd be more casual clothes, but I dressed in business professional attire the way I would going to the office, and I would try to devote 8 hours a day to job search, to view my job search as my job.
Right. Oh, you're very diligent. We wish you well. It's hard to be going through both people in the family looking for work at the same time. There are lots of financial considerations. Thank you so much for being with us, and best of luck to you, Clint.
Well, you're most welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Clint Cole and his story is featured in the Washington Post. It's on our website, too, if you go to WPR.org. Dr. Leahy, Robert Leahy, is staying with us, author of The Job Loss Recovery Guide, director of the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy, and will continue taking phone calls. A number of you, I know, have lost jobs. It's not an easy thing at all. We'll talk about many different areas, including how do you, at a time when you really want to rail against the company that let you go, for heaven's sake, I understand that fully. You need to probably keep somewhat good relationships there in terms of future employment. How do you keep from getting really down, which is an easy thing to do? We'll be welcoming your phone calls for Dr. Leahy at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Emails talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. You do need, when you have a natural amount of anger when you lose a job and anger at a company that let you go, how could they do this, even though they're downsizing, I'm a valuable employee. I think probably one of the hardest things to do is figure out what your relationship is going to be with the company you've been with, and you'll probably need some kind of reference from them.
Right. I think one of the things that people go through is a whole range of emotion, a sense of shame, sadness, anxiety, and anger. And you're always entitled to whatever emotion you have. I mean, no one could ever say you don't have a right to have a feeling. But the issue is what's going to be in your interest. And it's important to act on your interests, not always on your feeling. So a person might feel very resentful that it was unfair that they got fired. They may, you know, want to retaliate or they might badmouth the former employer. That's all kind of part of human nature. My view is to acknowledge that you have those feelings. Those are emotions that you have, but you don't have to act on those emotions. You should always think, where do I want to be a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now? What's going to be in my long-term interests? I know that people often feel that they're a victim of unfair circumstances, and often they're right.
Sure.
You can be right about it, but it may not be in your best interest to act on that sense of being a victim. What I suggest for people is to look at the reality as it is. Given that you've lost your job or you've gotten fired or whatever, and even given that it's unfair, it's a given. It is what it is. To accept it as a given doesn't mean you like it, doesn't mean you think it's fair, doesn't mean you think that they handled you well. But if you accept it as a given, then you have to say to yourself, I'm starting here, where do I want to be a month from now, a year from now? And I think being proactive, as our guest Clint has indicated to some extent, every day you have a job, which is looking for a job. Now, I actually suggest to people to sort of look at this time when you're unemployed as a time in between your last job and your next job. Part of it is you structure your day. You spend a few hours a day looking for a job, but you could also spend a few hours a day doing things that you didn't have time to do before, like spend time with your children, get more exercise, get involved in community activities, get involved in volunteer work, see people that you otherwise didn't have time to see, because eventually you're going to get a job, and you're going to probably look back and think, gee, I wish I had spent more time exercising or more time with my family or my friends, doing things that you otherwise did not have time to do when you were working full-time. One way of thinking about it is that it's a sabbatical, and like a lot of university professors have a sabbatical every 6 or 7 years where they get some time off. This could also be viewed as some time off that you can use for your own benefit. It doesn't have to be as morose an experience as many people feel it is.
Right. And except that you may be suffering anxiety about how to meet your bills, et cetera, I know that you offer advice on what to do with your savings, make sure you get unemployment comp, et cetera. There's a lot of anxiety that's natural anxiety,
sure,
because you don't have a paycheck, right?
I think one of the things that I find helpful for people is to examine the priorities of what you actually need. In our consumer economy, which is highly based on materialism and on, I think, a lot of false needs, that we tend to think that we need a lot of things that we actually don't need. So sometimes stepping back and thinking, okay, we need to prioritize. What are the things that we really need? We need to pay the rent or the mortgage or pay the food or whatever it might be. But there may be a lot of other discretionary expenses that are really unnecessary. And so this may be, for many people, may be the time when they're really beginning to think seriously about budgeting. Sometimes when people go through this period, they begin realizing, it was a time I had to step back and prioritize, and now that I have a job once again and income once again, I need to think about budgeting. I don't really need all these things that have been driving me to bankruptcy or to debt. There's a famous story about a Greek philosopher who ran through the marketplace in Athens screaming out the names of all the things that he didn't need. He kind of realized that a lot of the things that drive us in terms of what we feel is important in life are really not important in life. I grew up poor. I'm not poor now, but I grew up poor, and I kind of appreciate what I have, but I also appreciate that I actually don't need a lot of the things that I have, and that when I was growing up, I wasn't unhappy. I had friends, I had family, I had values, I had, things that were interesting to me. So stepping away from materialism sometimes can put things in perspective and help you think about what I would call, Kathleen, a life portfolio, not a financial portfolio. So your life portfolio could be your family, it could be your friends, could be the work you do in helping other people, could be play, could be spirituality, could be learning, could be all of these things. And money could be one piece of the pie, but not the entire picture.
Right. Let's take some phone calls. 800-486-8655. Craig from Viroqua. Hi.
Good morning. I took the total opposite approach of Clint. If anybody was unfortunate enough to ask Craig how he was doing, I told him exactly that I had gotten fired from Bethel Homes here in Viroqua. And then I was denied unemployment. Then I had to go to a hearing, and I talked to a guy way up in the unemployment office in Madison, and he reviewed my case, and he said, Craig, you got a less than 50% chance to win. And lo and behold, I went up to the hearing, and I won. So what I did act on my emotions. I acted on anger. Shame never entered the picture at all. It's extremely liberating for me. And that's what helped me to pursue unemployment benefits, like I said, which I did win. But the unemployment service is swamped. They are overworked, short-staffed, and ill-trained. They have people answering those questions that affect people's lives, and they just do not have the experience to answer the questions. So, yeah, and then the night that I told my wife that I was that I got fired from my job, about a half an hour later, she said that she wanted a divorce.
Really?
Really.
And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and then on top of that is the fact that I have a mortgage to pay as well. So it's been quite a trip, but I would have to say what fueled me was anger, yeah. Because I knew I should not have been fired. And obviously, when I went to the hearing up in La Crosse, the judge believed my story.
Right. Craig, what did you find another job?
No. Right now, after filing 3 weeks for my unemployment check, I have finally received my first check.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Leahy.
Well, Craig, I'm sorry to hear about the wife asking for a divorce, but I think one of the things that you find out when you go through any hardship in life is what the relationship is all about. And if somebody is going to divorce you because you lose your job, well, that's not really a friend, is it? So it's a terrible difficulty that Craig and many other people experience, but sometimes you find out what people are really made of. You find out what their character might be. I think the other thing is to think about, anger is certainly a legitimate emotion, and even a healthy emotion. The question is, how do you use it in your self-interest or against your self-interest? And it sounds like what Craig was doing is being assertive and being effective and being proactive and standing up for his rights and possibly getting some of his rights respected. So anger can be a first step in saying, okay, I feel angry, this is unfair, I'm not going to really tolerate it, and I'm going to take proactive steps and try to use the law to my benefit. So it sounded like you were proactive about it. I think the other thing, though, about this is to sort of think about losing a job as sort of part of the landscape of reality for almost anybody. I mean, it could be almost anybody listening who has a job, let's say who's in their 20s or 30s or 40s, that you should assume that it's possible, even probable, that at some point that job may not exist. It may not exist for any number of reasons that have nothing to do with you. And so what you need is a plan B. You need an alternative. And the alternative might be establishing a network. I believe always in forming alliances throughout your entire life. Always form new allies, new friends, new contacts, because you never know when you're going to need them. So forming alliances, getting involved in communities. So, for example, getting involved in church groups or volunteer groups or other groups. It gives you a sense of belonging, that you belong somewhere, you're helping other people, you make contacts with other people, you feel good about being useful. I have some of my patients who have told me when they volunteered to work at a homeless shelter, it was even better than therapy, which, of course, I found a personal insult. But they found that going to a homeless shelter, they realized what they had in their lives was quite valuable, and they realized that they mattered to somebody else. So sort of getting out of ourselves sometimes to help other people is a way in which we can help ourselves. I think the other thing in terms of the way people think about unemployment. They think that, I'll always be unemployed, I'll never get a job, this is absolutely terrible. These are natural thoughts that we have when we're upset. But the reality is that almost everybody who's unemployed eventually gets a job. And so one thing that may be helpful for some people, and hard to do at the same time, is to stretch time. In other words, rather than think, I need to get a job in the next week, that I need to give myself enough time to get a job while I'm being proactive, taking action every single day. So maybe you won't get a job in the first 2 months or the first even 4 or 5 months, but eventually, if you stretch time and you give yourself enough flexibility and you're proactive and you network, you join communities, you get involved, you share the experience of other people, you follow up on leads, you do all these things while you're taking care of yourself, that the time in between the last job and the next job can be better than you might think it could be.
Yeah. And I've had a pretty good experience, that was some years ago, with unemployment comp offices. He evidently didn't, but you certainly should apply for it.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times people realize that government agencies are quite bureaucratic, and it's not a personal thing. It's not like somebody is sitting there on Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock thinking about how they can frustrate you, that they're overwhelmed, as Craig pointed out, and he's completely right. They're overwhelmed, but you may have to be persistent. You may have to be flexible. You may need to get counseling on how to get your rights exercised. I sort of focus more on the psychological aspects of unemployment. Like, for example, Craig's wife seemed to be blaming him for the unemployment, which is never a very good way of responding to somebody you care about. I find that when somebody I know is unemployed, the first thing I do is to validate how difficult it is and ask them about their feelings. And they're going to have a whole range of feelings, Kathleen. They're going to have feelings of anger. They're going to have feelings of sadness, hopelessness, confusion, resentment, all of those feelings. I believe that feelings are always legitimate. You always have, it's like you always have a right to indigestion. You always have a right to a headache. You have a right to your feelings. But the issue is then, what is the problem-solving strategy that you're going to use? And taking a problem-solving strategy of that Clint eventually took, which is to structure his day, make every day my job is finding a job, that's a very good way of responding to dealing with the feelings that you're having, because you don't have to be stuck in the feeling. One of the things that we find with people who get depressed and anxious and people lose jobs, they sit around and they ruminate. They ruminate, that they have these thoughts that go over and over in their head.
Yes, right.
Why me? I can't believe this has happened. And this tends to maintain or prolong your depression, is rumination. What I ask people to do is one is to recognize you are ruminating. So when you find yourself ruminating, oh, I'm ruminating. The second thing to ask yourself is, do I really think that this rumination is going to help me? Because sometimes people think, if I ruminate enough, I'll find the answer and get the perfect solution. If your rumination is going to be useful, you could say, all right, what is the productive action I can take? And that might be, maybe I can exercise, maybe I could get involved in volunteer activity, maybe I can, structure looking for a job, maybe I can get some counseling, so forth. What is the productive activity? Rumination is different from productive activity. You can either ruminate about it or you can act on your interests.
Right.
And I think that rumination is something that is, because you have a lot of unstructured time during the day and you're likely to kind of fall back into that isolating passive rumination.
And it's very easy to do that, isn't it, Dr. Leahy? Because there you are and you're just sort of going over this again and you're trying to figure out the way somebody's treated you and what's gone on in the past, and you can't, it makes it almost impossible for you to move forward because you got that, you're all churned up about it.
Exactly. I have a book called The Worry Cure where I identify several things that you can do with your worries and your rumination, and I think the first thing to do is to accept that the reality is the way it is. The second is to ask yourself, is this going to be productive or unproductive, this rumination or worry? Productive action is something I can do today. So you know, productive action could be, I can, you know, I can contact some of my leads. I can look at job announcements. I could, you know, start focusing on acquiring new skills. I can do exercise. Productive action is something that moves you forward. Asking whether your rumination or worry is productive or unproductive is very, very helpful. I think the other thing is to look at the way you're thinking about it. And as I said earlier, like a lot of times we're far more reasonable and compassionate with strangers. So if you're going through the difficult time thinking, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened to me, say to yourself, what advice would I give a friend or a family member? And just write out what that advice would be and then follow your own advice. Because you're probably a lot better at giving advice to other people than you are at taking your own advice. Thinking about, you know, developing a compassionate voice toward yourself, a loving kindness toward yourself. You're going through one of the most difficult experiences in your life, and that this is a time where you need to be good to yourself and calming and soothing. Maybe treat yourself to some special things like go to a movie or rent a video or, you know, take a bubble bath or have some pleasure that you feel, you know, make yourself your favorite meal or something like that. Mm-hmm. Sort of take care of yourself and soothe yourself during this difficult time.
Thanks, Craig, for your call. Good luck to you in the weeks ahead here and months. Barbara is next from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this show. And your guest suggested we do a portfolio of life. I always wanted to get, I've been unemployed since March, and I've been trying to put a name on what I've been doing, and that's exactly what it is. So thank you for that. But my question is, I'm an older worker, and I worked at one place for 15 years, and the company closed, and then I was lucky enough to get a position right away at another company, and I worked there for 4 months, and they took a downturn, and I was laid off. Actually, my position was eliminated because they did a restructuring and restructured too large. At any rate, what my question is, I know that they have had other positions open at that company, and they're not my position. But my question is, why wouldn't that company contact a person who's been laid off to offer them the position rather than putting it out to the general public again?
Well, it's hard. It's hard to evaluate what their motives would be. I think a lot of times when people lose their jobs or they go through difficulty, they ask why questions, which are not going to be helpful in getting the answer. So, Barbara, if you had the answer for sure why they're doing it, it wouldn't help you. What would help you is being proactive, doing a lot of the things that we're talking about, developing your life portfolio, and so forth. So I think a lot of times, I mean, you know, it's a legitimate question. Why would they not contact a former employee that they think has done a very good job? That makes perfect sense. But asking the question is, even if it led to an answer, would not be helpful to you. So I think, you know, I know in my own experience in life, like, you know, when I was single, a girlfriend broke up with me, and I sat around ruminating, and I, why did she do this? I guess I was somewhat narcissistic, thinking that no one should break up with me. And then I kind of realized, I said, you know, Bob, even if you came up with the answer, you still got the same reality to deal with.
Right.
You know? So we tend to ask these why questions over and over and over, and then we come down to the reality of it. It would make no difference in my life if I knew why. You know, but I think Barbara, that your question illustrates how we tend to think about bad things happening. We keep looking for a reason, what the real reason would be, or what the person's motive might be, as opposed to, you know, taking our psychic energy and really devoting it to focusing on solving problems that are real that we can really make progress on. And it sounds, Barbara, like you got that life portfolio that I was talking about earlier. And that might be a better focus than why is this company not calling me up?
Yeah. How are your spirits? Are you doing okay, Barbara?
Oh, I am. And, you know, I am, like I said, that portfolio of life. I've quit smoking.
Good for
oh,
you.
My gosh, great.
And I went over my budget, and I'm finding that I'm able to manage pretty well financially. It's just that I'm trying to adjust. I've worked my whole life. I'm 60 years old, and I'm trying to adjust to being, you know, working full-time and making a living, and now I'm at home. And I am going to school, taking some classes. So I'm staying busy and trying to prepare for a future position, but it's different.
I also think that in our hurried culture and our kind of work absorbed materialistic culture, that we don't give enough value to time. Here in the United States, we say that this person works like a dog. In Europe, they say this person works like an American. So if you go to Italy, I'm half Italian, so I can really appreciate this. When you go to Italy, you know, people take time off. They have a nice lunch. They take a walk after dinner. You know, they put a value on time, having time to do things, not being hurried all the time. So one way of looking at this time in between, Barbara, is that you have some time to do other things that could be of value and could be of interest to you and can be meaningful to you. So using that time is important, and valuing that time is important, because you'll be back at work and you won't have any time
right.
at all.
Right. Barbara's got a lot going for her, though. She sounds youthful. She's going back to school, for heaven's sake, at the age of 60 to pick up new skills.
Good for her, Barbara.
Right?
Excellent.
Yeah, she's doing all right. So you're half Italian, half Irish?
Yeah, what a combination.
Oh, there's a combo. There's a combo. Let's welcome more phone calls in a moment. Our guest is Dr. Robert Leahy, director of the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy, author of a number of books, The Job Loss Recovery Guide, Worry Cure, The Worry Cure, that is, and Anxiety Free. We're looking at high unemployment, and our attention was drawn to a Washington Post article, which we have published on our website, WPR.org, that looks at unemployment and how a number of people, when they could get help from neighbors and friends and relatives, church members, et cetera, tend to hold, because they feel so much shame about losing their job, hold the story inside. And we're talking about how that can eat you up this hour and what it is you need to do to remain positive, which in turn will probably help you find something else. We have lines open if you'd like to join us. The number is 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Robert Leahy is our guest, and we'll go back to your phone calls in just a moment as soon as we get you on hold. Dr. Leahy, is there a difference, do you think, between the way men and women handle being given a pink slip?
Well, actually, the research seems to indicate that it has a more negative impact on men, although certainly can have a negative impact on women as well. I think for a lot of men that their sense of their job has become almost their entire focus of who they are. One person who lost his job, a man who lost his job, actually went through that kind of period of difficulty, and he came out realizing, you know, I'm not just the guy who goes to work for this big corporation. I'm the father of these children. I'm the husband of this woman. So he was able to sort of step away from this kind of overabsorption of role identity, that I am my job and my job is me, mm-hmm. to this wider life portfolio, where I think women, even though women are more likely to get depressed in general than men, job loss may not have as much of an effect on women as it does on men, because women also have better support networks, they have better friends, they have people that they can share things with, and they also have other ways of defining themselves. Many times they take a more active role in raising the children, and that gives them something that's quite meaningful.
Yeah. I was wondering, as I was listening to Clint talk earlier and reading his story, if he didn't feel more of the traditional, it's not that long that women have been entering the workforce in the numbers they have, and I think that men still carry this obligation of being a breadwinner, that it's pretty deeply ingrained.
This is why I think it's important for us to have a view of a life portfolio, that we're far more than one role in life. We're
right.
many, many things in life, many different roles, many different experiences, many different values. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom in ancient philosophy, which basically says that no matter what people do to you, you can always pursue your virtue. You can always pursue your integrity, mm-hmm. your courage, your self-control, your kindness, and your compassion. I know that for me, it makes me feel better if I reach out and show some kindness to a total stranger, someone I've never met before, if I show compassion and kindness to that person, I'm doing something for myself. I'm feeling good.
Oh, no doubt about that. Carrie from Augusta. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I have just one comment and then kind of, a comment question. My husband was unemployed from Thanksgiving until last April. He's employed again. But we really were able to be in the position of looking at it as a gift of time. He hadn't taken sick time for so many years or just had a chance to catch his breath. And we were fortunate enough financially to be able to do that. And he came back better, stronger, healthier after taking that time off. And he's working. He had multiple job offers when he did go back into the workforce. But the other piece is, and the one thing he struggled with, though, was he blamed his employer. And we had to really work through that together. Now, I'm an employer, and we're going through some tough financial times. And I'm kind of surprised how it does bring out the best and the worst of character. I have some employees who I keep thinking, I'm trying not to lay off you guys, but boy, you're sure not making it easy, you know. So I guess that's my comment question is that struggle where what do I do as an employer when I'm trying to do the best I can and people are kind of blaming me?
Well, Carrie, I think your comments carry a lot of wisdom. I think one of the things that, as an employer, you probably are responding to is a sense of entitlement among the people working for you, as opposed to, you know, what's in your interest, hopefully would be in their interest, which is to be profitable and productive, and you're trying to do the best you can. I think as an employer that it's important not to take it personally, that it's simply part of what human nature is like today, that some people feel entitled, they're going to blame you and whatever it might be. But going back to your husband's blaming, you know, I think the way of thinking about an emotion like blaming is to recognize that you can acknowledge you have the emotion, you have a right to the emotion, you might even be right, but you can take that emotion, put it up on the shelf, and aim for something different. And the thing that you can aim for that's different is being proactive, being productive, trying to do things that are going to be in your interest. You can say, yeah, I still blame them, but I'm not spending, you know, 23 hours a day focusing on it. I'm spending 3 minutes a day focusing on it. And it's not having the feeling. It's getting stuck in the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key thing, I think, that it's kind of like we spin our tires and we wonder why we're getting deeper and deeper in a rut, as opposed to simply, you know, get out of the car and walk to where you have to go.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your call. We go next to Michael from La Crosse. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good morning. One of your comments caught my ear, this idea of that when you're jobless, making your job, looking for employment. I was stuck in the doldrums for several months after completing my education, and actually my sister said that to me, and it just shocked me out of everything, and I would wake up in the morning and put in good 6, 7, 8 hours and just searching the internet, writing cover letters, resumes, getting them out. And then I wanted to wonder if other callers had, I practice Buddhism regularly, and so I, in discussion with friends, they said, you know, when you chant for perfect employment, not just a job, but what you, whatever may be out there. And it came my way.
All
and
right.
I've been in my employment for 5 years now.
Good for you, Michael. That's great. Dr. Leahy, we have about 30 seconds left.
Well, I mean, I think the people who've called and shared their experiences are actually describing a lot of different ways in which people cope. So mindful meditation or, you know, getting advice or hiding or ruminating, these are ways in which people cope for the good or the bad. There are a lot of different ways of coping. I think it's important to normalize unemployment, not to take it personally, not to overgeneralize it to your entire life, to have a life portfolio, to look at this as a challenge and an opportunity to start exercising some new skills. I was talking with somebody just yesterday who had lost his job and finally got a job. And I said to him, what did you learn from this? And he said, what I learned is that I was far more resilient and determined than I ever thought I would be. This is somebody who had been employed for many years at another job. And he said even he's never seen himself so focused and so determined at making something happen. He said as a result of it, I actually feel better about myself. And he realized that his wife was a wonderful partner during this, and he also realized that he had more time for his son. So he's sort of back at work, but I think he found that going through a difficult time, he also found that there were people on his side, that he shared the experience, and people were really actually proud of the way he handled it.
Thank you, Dr. Leahy, so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Dr. Robert Leahy, director of the American Institute for Cognitive Therapy, author of a number of books, including the Job Loss Recovery Guide. Ben Marins has his job line today at 5 o'clock, which seems appropriate to mention it. If you're able to post a job or if you're looking for work, please listen in to that broadcast, which will be good for you, maybe. May change your life. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing this hour, to Rob for on-air production. We'll be with you again tomorrow.